And welcome to The Smoke Break. I am your host, your old pal Zane, here with Taylor Barrett.
Hello.
And Timo Ledwith.
Hello.
Timo is actually was previously a comedian, but is currently working in behavioral health, and I'm so excited to have you here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So on today's episode, what we wanted to talk about was, kind of to speak to what we were talking about a second ago, it's taking a step away. You're taking a step away from comedy. Do you want to tell us a little bit about like what prompted that and kind of maybe some of the things you've learned?
Yeah. I did comedy for a while. I started in like 2012.
Yeah.
And, things were going pretty good for me. I could go around different parts of the country. I got some accolades here. I had a show at Helium Club.
Yeah.
Things were going well. But I just wasn't really part of me. Well, I think it was more like my kind of goals were like kind of changing. And I kind of was seeing what what am I going to do with this? You know, like I was always trying to make comedy like stand-up comedy something else, and then like
what do you mean make it something else?
I don't know. I was always trying to incorporate like multimedia into it, or like trying to make things like I don't know, like I had all these grand aspirations, more like performance art or something. And then I just realized I could just do something else too. But I think what happened was, you know, I had a lot of crazy things happen in my life too all at once. I lost like my brother. I had I had these run-ins with, the Proud Boys. I'd got beaten up by them. And it was like, and, you know, my outlook was just really kind of like, fuck it at that time. And, you know, I just wasn't really, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like comedy isn't just performing comedy, you know, there's like a lot of bullshit that comes with it, and and I just was losing my appetite for that kind of stuff. And then also, I think at the end of the day too, I was like, well, what am I gonna do with this? Like, I don't like doing shows at like for like, you know, like I'm never gonna work at like the I had a show at the Helium Club,
right?
Mainly because it was literally billed as a show for like comics that can't work at the Helium Club,
you know?
It was called Loose Cannons, I wasn't going out and doing like any show, you know, like I wasn't going out and doing like a show for like loggers,
right?
Or bachelorette parties or whatever.
Okay. It sounds like you were kind of already in a space where you were ready to take a step back because it wasn't filling the void that maybe it was before.
And then also too, it was like, well, what's the end goal here? It's like, everybody was like, you got to move to like New York or Los Angeles. And it's like, and then do what? Like, I mean, maybe I'll get like lucky and I'll get to write on like a show or something, some like horrible sitcom or I'll get to be in a commercial for like, you know, Sunny D or something. I don't know. It just wasn't really, my goals weren't really aligning with it. And I think, I was kind of, I think, you know, politically too, I think I was really, you know, re-radicalized, I think, at the time period. You know, it was like 2017, 2018. When I was in my younger years, like in the early 2000s, I was really, you know, involved in a lot of radical, like leftist politics and stuff. And over the years, kind of got away from that. And so that definitely informed my stuff a little bit. Yeah. And then just like, you know, I was in it like really hardcore at that time, you know, like, you know, like, and it was a violent time too, you know, for that kind of stuff, you know? And it was kind of just like no bullshit. I was like not putting up with any bullshit.
And I appreciate like your advocacy on that front, you know, like even like getting beaten up by like the Proud Boys and shit. Like that's showing up for people that like, you know, like you as like a white male, like you don't have to show up for that. You know what I mean?
Well,
it means a lot when you do, but like that could have easily been something that you're like, well, I mean, that's their problem.
Well, no, I mean, I got beat up and like not at a protester. I got beat up like just on the street in front of Safeway.
That's
like
so messed up.
Fucking like just like for they didn't even know who I was. I mean, I knew who they were, but they didn't even know who I was. But
really? What the fuck?
Like, yeah, it was, and it kicked off a long ass thing that happened. Like, you know, it was, it's a very long, it's a very, very long story.
I mean, a lot of stuff was happening during that time, so it kind of facilitated a spot where you could take a step back.
Yeah, it threw me into, like, a sort of a bad spot with that too, because it put like a target on me. But
yeah,
But aside from that, you know, yeah, I just felt like it was a time to step back, maybe do something else. I still haven't really figured out what that else is.
Yeah,
yet, you know, but.
Well, you're working in behavioral health now. Like, have you felt like you've been able to kind of use your sense of humor? And it's like,
oh yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Way to connect.
I mean, I always have been able to do that. I think, you know, growing up, I mean, like, you know, being able to use, you know, I went to like juvenile detention when I was a kid, or I was in like other locked facilities, or, you know, I'd be around other fucked up people, you know, and I was always able to use, I was a short kid, so I was able to use my sense of humor, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
But I will say though, I always thought of what I wanted to do with comedy was distinct from that, you know, like, I always saw it maybe as like an art form, you know, like where I was able to make people laugh wherever.
Right.
You know, like, but you know, with comedy, I wanted it to be something else. And
yeah,
you know, it just didn't, but I think I picked a good time to step away from it, because then the pandemic hit like a year later.
Yeah,
so I was like,
yeah. It looks like everybody's taking a break.
Yeah.
That'll kind of create like a good opportunity for transition too, when everybody kind of has to like take a step back from everything because of the pandemic. Then you're like, okay, well, if I was going to do that anyways, you know, maybe this is a good time to kind of like sit, reevaluate. And like you said, you were like experiencing a transition in like goals and your appetite for wanting to do comedy.
Yeah, even. Totally. And like, yeah, and I mean, I'm glad I didn't have that desire then, because I imagine that would have been difficult. I mean, you probably know, like,
yeah.
Like,
no,
putting on a show during
open
that
mics,
time.
I don't know.
Oh my god, yeah, that was pretty awful. I definitely can kind of relate with that. Like having like a period of your life where, you know, everything may be going right, but like is also kind of falling apart, is like, you know, it gives you that time to like take a step back and just be like, hey, is this like something that's really serving me? You know, because it's like when you spend all this time like going for a goal, like you think that like your life is incomplete without that goal. And then when you take that time to like to step away, you can look at it and be like, okay, like this is what my life looks like without this. Like, is it still a complete life? And you know, if it is, then like, you know, maybe that's something you can go without doing, you know. But like, if there is still that passion in there for you, you know, maybe you can either try it again, or you can figure out a different way to serve that, you know. Because like I feel like, you know, like I took a step away from comedy for about like 2 years, and that was like that was a period of my life where like I was struggling really, you know, I was struggling a lot, and I needed that time and space to take away. But after I had taken that time away, I realized how much, you know, like being able to communicate through comedy meant to me.
Yeah.
And that was something that like I don't think I really understood, because I dove headfirst into it, just kept doing it. So you don't really understand what role something plays until you're able to take a step away from it.
Totally, yeah. And I mean, like, and there's definitely things I miss about it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny though with the Zoom open mic, because like the idea of like a Zoom open mic like before the pandemic would have been in kind of enticing to me as like a performance art piece. But then like to have that only be like what you could do is that sounds horrible.
Yeah. But that being the only option I don't want to only have to do this.
Yeah, no. but yeah, no, I mean, and you know, I learned a lot about myself. You know, I mean, it was obvious. I mean, every time is a transformative time. But I mean, my time during comedy, a lot of shit happened with me. And a lot of, I struggled a lot with addiction and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but being able to communicate and, you know, talk about, you know, learning how to, like, when I first started, you know, just kind of like, it was cathartic.
Yeah.
Like almost like trauma dump onto like the mic, you know, where, you know, I started to learn like, no, I don't want to do that. And,
yeah.
Like, you know, and like, learn that like therapy isn't supposed to be on the stage.
It's yeah,
like,
exactly. Know, like, I hate when comics say that. Yeah, there's like, this is pretty much therapy. It's just like, no, it's not. This is an open mic.
It can be therapeutic, but it shouldn't be your exclusive form of therapy.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like when like, I think it was like, I don't know. I think it was like Norm Macdonald or something said like when like they talk about like, it's got one of those other like ways in which comedians will be like, oh, we're like the modern day philosophers. And it's like, no, yeah, there's modern day philosophers actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, and it's like another thing like that. It's like, this is therapy. It's like, no, it's not therapy.
Yeah. It's not therapy. It's not philosophy. Yeah. It's comedy. Yeah. It can be also those things. But
I wanted to ask, is there anything that you feel like you learned, any skills you developed that you've been able to, even after like taking a step back from comedy, is there anything that you've been able to like maintain and incorporate throughout your life?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, like being able, I mean, just the other day we had a meeting in the behavioral health department at my work. Mm-hmm.
Your work?
Yeah. But the director, the executive director was like, hey, did you ever do stand-up comedy? You know, just when I like spoke about something. So yeah. I learned how to orate. I learned how to like, you know, and just other skills too. Just knowing what I'm doing with my body at any given time.
Yeah,
you have to pay attention to that.
So you see that on stage, you're like, I fidget a lot.
Oh my god! I mean, I was nonstop. I mean, especially back when I was doing crystal meth and doing comedy.
Yeah,
I was like, I mean, yeah.
I did those two separately, so I can only imagine at the same time.
God. it was wild. Yeah, and it was weird because I was like known for it too. It
really?
Was like, yeah. And then I was known for getting, like, I got clean from it, you know?
Yeah.
And, but then, like, people would joke around. They would be like, oh, you're back when you used to do crystal. You
know,
I would always talk about it like that. Like, but, you know, then I would relapse and go back and forth. But yeah, no, I mean, like, yeah, one time in L.A., I was, like, I had gone out the night. Well, basically, I don't know if you've ever gone to L.A. to do comedy, but, like, when you go down there and, like, all these comedians that come up here are, like, oh yeah, come stay with me. And then you go down there and you're like homeless on like
it's the offer everyone makes until they have to follow through on it.
So I ended up in this crazy situation. I ended up like, you know, at night and like, you know, doing a bunch of meth and stuff. And then I had this show in Venice Beach, I remember, and like on stage I like, because this was like some super meth. Dude, plus I was also not super really doing meth, it. Okay. I wasn't really like doing it that much.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? So I was like that whole day, I was like, I mean, I was like, I took apart like the microphone stand. Like, I somehow like broke this microphone stand like permanently, like during my set. Like, I was just like fidgeting with it in some way. And then I was like holding it together. And then I like brought it back to the guy. I was like, I don't know what's wrong with this thing, man.
Like, your mic sucks, dude. I don't know. What did you do?
Like, I'm more of a taker aparter than putter together.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my other buddy who does meth.
Yeah. We're a great team.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I think that you know, like the experiences that we have when we're doing something that we're really like passionate about are like things that we can like, you know, either look fondly back on or look back and be like, oh man, like maybe that wasn't the version of myself that I've always wanted to be. But like, I think that like you can't really get that perspective unless you take like a step away.
You know? Totally.
Because like, you know, something that was said to me, and I think I may have even said it on this show, was like, I had this friend basically like say like, you know, if you're doing like a painting or a drawing and you're like super up fucking close to it, you can make this beautiful fucking hand, right?
Yeah.
And then you take a step back and you're like, oh, holy fuck, that hand's really good, but everything around it looks like shit.
Yeah.
You know, but like you don't have that perspective because you're super up close and you're like, this is a really detailed hand.
Totally.
So it's like, it's just kind of that idea that like when you're able to take a step back, you can truly see how things are, you know, and you know, decide what your next move is.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely feel like that was the case.
Definitely. All right, well, awesome. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the smoke break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Taylor Barrett.
What's up, everybody?
And Timo.
Hey, what's
Tebow!
Up?
Tebow!
Tebow's in the house.
But yeah, so the next second topic that we wanted to talk about and kind of connects to the last one we were talking about is addiction. Addiction and substance use. We all kind of work in the mental health field, and yeah, substance use is something that like gets talked a lot about, but it's honestly something that we haven't really talked about super a lot on this show. My experiences with substance use were probably about, I would say 10, it's got to be over 10 years ago, was, you know, I had lost a friend and, you know, that person had used substances. and I had kind of justified to myself, like, this is me honoring them. And
yeah.
I feel like in my situation, you know, I was trying to find a connection for, you know, I was trying to connect with this person. You know, I was dealing with grief. I was dealing mm-hmm. with loss, and this is how I was able to connect with them. But you know, I started off smoking pot, but then it had moved to pills, and then it had moved to meth. And then I was luckily, busted, which I, you know, I, for me, that was kind of the point where I was able to make a transition. I was able to make a decision of, is this how I want my life to continue? Mm-hmm. What do I want to do next? What do I want the next, you know, 5-10 years to look like? And yeah, I was had to do that. What's been your experience with substance use?
I mean, I haven't had a lot of experience without it. I mean, sure. I mean, just like, you know, or dealing with the issue. I mean, yeah, I started using drugs really, really young. You know, I mean, I would say, you know, like 10 years old even, but really? Even, I mean, maybe even earlier, you know, like, you know, whatever I would even just stare at the sun and spin around, you know,
right.
You know, like, you know, I had a pretty traumatic childhood and, it, you know, for certain reasons. And then,
sure.
You know, I think once I learned that I could feel differently, that's what I wanted to do.
Just kind of escape into that.
Yeah, I was like definitely a product of the DARE program, which, you know,
helped so many people.
Yeah, yeah. The DARE program in my town too was like it was all these cops that like did cocaine and stuff. You know?
But, if you ever find this, give it to me. I mean,
yeah. And they like taught us how to like huff. You know,
what the fuck?
They're supposed to teach you not to do these drugs. They're like, so what you do is you spray it on a towel.
Yeah,
and you hold it to your face.
What I mean, some people do to get high is
and like I remember they showed us a video too of like this Alice in Wonderland world. There's this girl just eats acid and goes in this Alice in Wonderland world, and it's like, that's what I've wanted my whole life.
Yeah. That was fucking awesome. What do I get?
Yeah. So yeah, I started doing.
Which one was that?
I started doing, like, you know, drinking, smoking weed, and then, you know, pills. It's anything, you know. Started doing acid a lot, like when I was, you know, probably like 14.
Yeah.
You know, 14, 15, like, I mean, eating. I mean, if I took like one tab of acid now, I'd be out of my mind. But I would take like, first time I ever took acid, I took 5 hits of acid.
Oh, you know? Lord.
That's a way to jump in with your feet first.
Yeah, and I was alone. You know, I didn't think you were supposed to bring other people into it, you know.
Yeah.
You bring other people into it and they want to like
trip you out, be like, fishbowl.
Yeah, they want to play Bloody Knuckles and listen to Rammstein and shit. And
just like, dude, whoa.
I'm trying to like, you know, but you know, so then I guess it moved on from there. You know, a lot of people where I grew up in Massachusetts had a really bad crack and heroin problem.
Okay.
We didn't have, meth was a thing I didn't learn about until I came out here. But I mean, I knew about
it.
And it would be like come around every so often. I'd go to raves and stuff. You'd get at raves, but
your exposure to it was kind of limited.
Yeah. But crack, I remember when I first did that, I was like, this is fucking awesome. You know,
yeah,
like,
this is not whack at all. I don't really know what they're saying.
I was like, this is great. But I saw what it did to people, though, around me, and I was just like, damn. But heroin hit my area really bad.
Yeah.
And that was really kind of when I was getting out of there, though. Like, I scraped through high school by the skin of my nuts. But, you know, I was able to... But yeah, I mean, but drugs were always around. I got in a lot of trouble. Like, you know, like I said earlier, I got locked up for a violent crime. I was looking at being locked up my entire adolescence, like from age 13 to 18. Luckily, I didn't. But, you know, the consequences of that was I would end up in these like mental facilities after then, too. And those were really, you know, so it was a lot of trauma, a lot of, you know, coping with stuff, trying to make sense of my past, things like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, something that like we talk about is that like drugs work until they don't.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that, you know, like especially for like people who are living out on the streets, you know, like meth would be the thing that would keep keep you safe.
Yeah, yeah, keep you awake. You know, you don't have to eat. You don't have to.
I didn't think about the eating.
You know, also being homeless is just like a lot of waiting in line and like doing fucking just a lot of waiting around. And it's like it makes time go by fast. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, but meth was the thing I got into when I came out here. I came out here. I was working at Delta Airlines at the airport, you know, offloading planes at like 4 a.m. And I used to joke that, like, you know, you can't do that without meth.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know.
Can't be like, awake that early. Can't be working that hard that early.
The only people that did that were everybody else I worked with except for me. But, but yeah, no. And then it just kind of took over. Because, you know, when I was younger, I had a prescription of Adderall that was insane. Like, out there. And that's the thing. Massachusetts has the least amount of meth of any state, but it has
most
amount of
Adderall.
Most prescription. I mean, I had a 90 milligram prescription.
Jesus.
You know, I mean, that's just.
How old were you when you
that.
Got your Adderall prescription?
I was like 16 or 17. And the only reason I got it was I told the doctor, I was like, yeah, you know, these kids are, you know, they started, you know, they all take this Adderall and they get all fucked up and I'll do well on tests. And then he was just like, all right, what were you taking? And I was like, and, you know,
what
and I was
the
like,
fuck?
So
I can't even get hit. I can't even get an Adderall prescription with like not saying that being like, I'm going to use this for this, 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 and this.
I know. And that's,
I don't know.
And that's what I've been trying to do now because, you know, I was addicted to meth for a long time and, you know, it was hard to get off of it. But, you know, I realized what I was doing, you know, I have ADD. I have ADHD,
exactly.
You know, and it's, they realize now, at least, you know, that people use meth for different reasons.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And so now I'm kind of working with a doctor about, you know, moving on, maybe getting on to, because I'll just keep going back. I mean, like, it's been a while and I'm proud of that. But, but if I don't have something, you know, I'm going to go back at some point. I just know it, you know.
Well, I mean, and even to recognize that, I think is extremely important is recognizing that, like, this is or was serving a purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what this is offering to me, you know, in what way can I reincorporate this into my life in a healthy way?
Yeah. And, you know, and then there was a period of time where I mixed heroin in with it. So it was like, I was doing shots of heroin and meth at the same time.
And little speedballs.
Yeah. And, you know, just, and I mean, but I'm like, but this was like later on, like this is at a time when I had kind of, I thought I'd figured things out. And I had a big period of time where I wasn't really using and I'm getting my life on track and all this, but I just had I was beset by a lot of tragedy all at once. And, and then I had like just a lot going on. And then the problem was I wasn't dealing with that. And then, I was doing that. And then I got clean from that. But there was something that like, one of the doctors said to me, last time when I was in, treatment or when I was in detox, and he said, you know, everything that you've done, like every drug you've done up until this point, you know, even the ones that I did that literally killed, I mean, I have overdosed like 9 times, but
wow.
He said, you know, literally kept you alive though.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just understanding like the survival aspect of it. Cause I feel like people just see drugs as like this thing, you know, or substance use as this like, oh, you know, they're just doing it to have fun or they're lazy. Or it's just like, no, man, like we're all dealing with different sorts of trauma, different sorts of experiences. And like, if that's the thing that helps you get through that experience, like something that you know, my boss has said like multiple times and has even said on the podcast is like dead people don't get to make better decisions.
It is
so
true.
If using is keeping you from taking your own life, then like
yeah. And it totally was that.
Well, that's kind of like the foundation for like the harm reduction standpoint, you know.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Having that same experience, like what would that have looked like if you know you didn't do drugs or this person that you're just seeing at their like lowest point or at their most struggling point, then like what would that look like if they were just sitting there? You know what I mean? Like they'd be having a completely different experience, and it's important to recognize that, like you said, they work until they don't, and what it is that they're doing for this individual, you are probably only seeing the parts of it that might make you uncomfortable, but there's a whole list of things that you're seeing that you're not seeing that would probably make you more uncomfortable, that are making them more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And if this person is coping until they can find something else, then like that deserves a little bit of recognition.
Well, yeah. I mean, like for me, I mean, with having dealt with so much trauma in my past that, I'll literally get, into a mode where I forget what it's called now, but it's like a sensory disorder almost. Like the way I've heard this described, this sensory disorder, is like the only way I'll describe it. I mean, I get a feeling through my whole body that is like so uncomfortable and so just difficult to deal with that. Like if I had to deal with that all the time, I definitely would kill myself. I mean, it's like not even a question. You know?
Yeah.
And this is someone that like, you know, and I'm not even allowed to kill myself now because my brother killed himself. So it's like,
right.
So it's like, you know, and so it's like, but like if I had to deal with that, like all the time, nonstop, like if I had to deal with that feeling, I mean, there's no way to cope with it. It's like a chronic pain or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know that there's people that deal with that, you know, and they deal with much worse even, you know.
Right.
Describing sensory issues, especially extreme sensory issues, to people that don't struggle with sensory issues is such a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
They're just like, you just feel that all the time. And it's like, I feel that times 10 all the time, plus 10 other senses that are just overwhelming me all the time.
Yeah.
And it's so confusing. And it's, you know, to know that someone is using something to like cope with that, like completely makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. To dull some of those senses.
And you should. I mean, at some point you gotta, you know, shooting heroin and crystal meth or doing fentanyl or, you know, it's not going to sustain. Like,
it's not sustainable.
But there's a reason why people are doing that. And,
yeah.
You know,
and just even recognizing that like, it's not sustainable, but it may be helping in a moment.
Yeah. Right.
Because like there's so often times that like we're just trying to get through the moment. We're just trying to get through today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the idea that like some of us have never used drugs to get through some of our hardest, like good on you. But like I needed to when I was struggling.
Yeah.
And to discount that, like, you know, people are struggling in ways like something I had read was like, don't judge anyone for dealing with a pain that you've never dealt with, for how they deal with a pain you've never dealt with.
Yeah.
And it's like most people don't even know or understand the pains that people are dealing with because all they see is the surface. All they see is somebody who's sitting there and not working, not understanding why they're not working, not understanding the factors that make them afraid to interact with people, not understanding any of the contributing factors of like why this person is struggling, but just seeing a person sitting and being like, they're not at work and I'm going to work.
Especially from like a houseless perspective, you know, like a lot of people, you need to get a job, you need to go to therapy. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go try to get therapy. And then you need an address and you need a social security card and you need an ID and you need all these pieces of information.
You need the therapy to be available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and then someone walks by and they're like, they fucking open up a coat and offer you something. And it's like, okay, well, that was much quicker.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of interaction gets overlooked a lot by people that have really easy access to things like that.
Yeah.
And also too, I mean, like, and it's even beyond, you know, trauma and you know, psychiatric disorders. I mean, a lot of people on the street have suffered from traumatic brain injuries.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I mean, that's something with my brother who committed suicide. You know, I mean, we don't know exactly what happened, but I mean, that's what I've gathered is that, you know, he suffered from a traumatic brain injury from a bike accident. And ever since then, it like, you know, it changed him, you know,
yeah.
And that happens a lot. I mean, like, when I was working in the shelters at my past job, you know, like there's guys that for whatever reason, they have like a disorder or they're just drunk all the time or whatever, but they're always falling and hitting their head. It's like,
yeah.
And then there's violence that happens on the street. You know, there was someone I knew that was living on the streets in like the Buckman neighborhood from my old job. And he was telling me like, I saw him one day and his head was all busted up and he said he was just sleeping and someone just came into his tent, hit him in the head while he was sleeping. And like, he said that was happening to like, you know, a lot of people he knew at the time, you know, it's like, you know, like things like that, you know,
things that are out of your control are contributing to things that people think you should be controlling.
Yeah.
You know? They're just like, oh, well, why don't you just get a job? It's just like, I don't even process the world the same way that you do, you know, like, and for you to expect me to do the same things you're doing with not the same tools is just extremely unfair.
And like, as someone that struggles with sleep, you know, it being lucky enough to like have an apartment and a comfortable bed, I couldn't even begin to imagine what having a regulated sleep schedule would look like for someone that's struggling to find housing, you know?
Yeah.
That's so overlooked. Like, you have to sleep to be able to maintain things, to maintain a job and to maintain a schedule. And
to wake up in time to go to the therapy thing that you've been waiting 6 months for.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then you had a rough night on the street, you slipped through your appointment, and now you don't have access to the thing that you've been working towards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely say that, like, substances have a place, and it sounds like they've played, like, a role in each of our lives.
Yeah, and totally. And, you know, I You know, they, like you said, they worked until they didn't, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I think, you know, recognizing that, like, you know, we want people here, you know, like if so a comic had talked about that I talked with, they talked about like having a suicide attempt and but them also being sober and them being like, I wish I would have just drank instead of trying to take my own life.
Actually, alcohol one time saved me from killing myself because it's a long story, but yeah, but it actually involves people with comedy and stuff like too, but,
yeah,
that you
yeah.
know, but basically I was going to use heroin, like a major dose of heroin. And, I had this long night where I did all the things I wanted to do that night. I did comedy. I went out dancing. I even had like people know, like I had messages sent to my mom, all this stuff. And then I got home to do it. And, but I drank that night.
Yeah.
And then I got home and I spilled the fucking heroin all over that.
Oh, it was like, shit. You know, damn.
That's some divine intervention.
Yeah, right? Divine intervention. Well, excellent. I'm glad you're still here. I'm glad you're still here. All right. Well, we're going to take a real quick break and we'll be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the smoke break. We are here with Taylor Barrett.
What up?
And Tebow.
Tebow.
Thank you so much for joining us. On this last part, we're going to talk about just the idea of. What is the healthier or the healthiest version of yourself? I would definitely not say I am the healthiest version that will ever exist, but I would definitely say I'm a healthier version than I was before. A lot of things contribute to that. I would say perspective, but I would also say that, you know, a lot of work has gone into that. So what would you say has been your journey with like trying to get to a place where you're the healthiest version of yourself?
Well, I would say, you know, when I have things in my life that I'm content with, you know, when I don't have things that are just, you know, hanging over me and like, you know, financial issues or, you know, when I'm happy at what I'm doing, when I'm have healthy relationships, when I'm fostering community, things like that. So I would say right now I'm in a good spot, but you know, but it hasn't been like a linear trajectory there. You know, even recently, I felt like the first half of this of 2023, I feel like was kind of bleak for me, to be honest with you.
Right.
But what I think it shows is that, you know, if you grow over time, you can weather those storms a lot better, you know, and deal with situations that are really intense. And
yeah, well, I've definitely heard like the sentiment that like, you know, it doesn't get easier, you just get better.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, like I said, like I would not say that I am the best version of myself, but I would definitely say I'm miles ahead of the person that I was, you know, 10 months ago, 5 years ago. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, 10 months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you, Taylor? What's been like your journey on like trying to find out like what the healthiest version of yourself is?
Well, I think that my journey with that definitely started with conceptualizing that idea. You know, like I operated for many years. I want to say let's go with like 22 years, right? Of just like not even really worrying about what the healthiest version of myself was, what that even looked like. It wasn't like, I don't want to quite say coasting, but it was pretty damn close to it, where I was just kind of taking everything day by day. I wasn't really worried about what the next 5 years were going to bring. I wasn't, you know, super like I would consider career stuff, but I hated every job that I had. You know, I did fine in high school, but I fucking hated it. And so like the idea of that being preparation for like what a job looks like, I was like, this fucking sucks. Finding social work definitely gave me a sense of purpose. And it's by far the most rewarding position I've ever been in. And it's cool, like being able to work in a job where I can see myself expanding on it. And, and so now like having that sense of longevity definitely gives me room to consider like, what being better at it would be, what being a better version of myself in that role would be. And, even before I had like the role in social work, it just considering like to get there, I had to consider what the healthier version of myself was going to be. And I never really phrased it that way when I was younger, but just the idea of like the things that I want to improve on, things that I want to keep, you know. I think a lot of personal growth gets bogged down by the perspective of things that you need to change. But I think there's another layer of that, of things that you want to improve on, things that you already like about yourself that you can expand on and lead into more. and trying to navigate both of those has helped me become the better version of myself. And there's still plenty of things, even things that I haven't improved on nearly as much as I would like to. There's still plenty of things I need to work on. And I think that everybody kind of has those things that ended up being a lot more difficult to experience personal growth with than like other things, and things that were also much easier to experience personal growth with. Some things took a catalyst. Some things took getting in trouble or getting caught, like you said. And, but using those as opportunities for personal growth instead of just like viewing them from a lens of animosity, where it's like, oh, this fucking sucks. I can't believe I got caught. You know, your perspective on it of like getting busted gave me these opportunities.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful, very like poetic version of, you know, taking every chance that you can get to experience personal growth and becoming the healthier version of yourself.
Well, I feel like too, you know, getting into social service work, like, you know, that was a saving grace for me too, because about I got into that kind of work about 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago. And, you know, it's very rewarding. I mean, like, it can be very frustrating in some ways, but it's different from when you go to work at like a different job where you're like, you know, I don't know if you feel like you've made, you know, you can make somebody's day, you can really help somebody and be there for somebody and listen to somebody. And that's really cool. And then it gives you rewards and also gives you a way out. You know, I didn't get like a college degree, you know, I've had some ups and downs, you know, but I have been able to build a career out of this, you know, and over time, you know, like I've worked my way up into like, you know, and I'm about to have like acronyms after my name and stuff now. And shit, you know, and you know, it's cool, and I can do all that with just on the job experience without having to go back and get a degree. If I go back and get a degree, I can probably do better. But honestly, there's plenty of people in the position that I'm at now that have like full degrees and stuff. It took me, you know, 6 years of building up that, but you can do it through just doing the work, which is cool, you know?
Yeah.
And it gives you, I don't know if you get to like my, I don't know how old either one of you are, but
he's young as shit, but I'm 32.
I'm not young. You're 32. I'm 27.
27. Okay. So I'm 40. So, you know, when you get to a certain age and you're like, fuck, like I haven't done much, you know, like I haven't got, you know, and then
I don't have that thing yet.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have this way of just like building, like I would never thought I would ever even be able to use the word career for like anything I was doing.
Yeah.
Hard relate.
You know, and like, you know, that world is, and also like we were talking about earlier, you know, it's a job you know, your past traumas, your past bullshit that you've been through, your, you know, whatever it is, addiction,
all the wide variety of experiences.
Yeah. It benefits you in the job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you have perspective other people don't.
Lived experience is key, you know? So it's I've never even considered like all that stuff is something that like you have to hide for other jobs, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, for sure. Thank you for saying that. Cause like, I definitely, when I would like put on a resume, they're just like, oh, do you have any past felonies? I'm like, we'll explain it interview. And it's now it's like, oh, like, have you ever been caught with meth? It's just like, you know, have you ever done meth? It's just like, no. It's like, oh, well then why would I hire you? It's like,
yeah.
And it's also really cool. Talking to clients that have, like a really struggling sense of purpose where they just feel stuck and they feel very hopeless. And then, you know, you can kind of relate to that. And they're like, you've experienced that? You've been able to kind of crawl out of that.
And I'm like, thought it was the end of the road and it wasn't. Like, that's inspiring for people.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie and say it was like the easiest path, but it's also very, very possible. You know, like you could be in the same role as I am. And I would love to call you a coworker one day.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, just think about all of us that like were struggling at a point and didn't have anybody to look to and say like, well, they did it. Maybe I can too.
Exactly.
And that's why, like, you know, with the job I have now and the job I used to have, I got really involved with the union that you know, that represents the it's the same union, but it's a different local. But yeah, you know, I've been involved with that union really hard, and I dived right into that. And you know, I had a labor background from the past, but mainly it's because, you know, people that do this work need to be compensated. They need to have like I've seen people in this work get so burnt out so hard, and like the last job I worked at, they didn't, you know, salaries were very low and just like a lot and so being able to actually show up and then not also be dealing with the same problems. You know, we had a problem at my last work where people were going homeless that were
working with homeless
people. You know, like that's not sustainable, you know?
So, yeah, exactly.
So I'm a huge advocate for you know, just for workers in this field. And, you know, and when you, and it's cool too, when you do like union organizing with social work, it's cool because there's another part of it too. There's another component where, you know, you're not just doing it for the, your workers, you're doing it for the people that you also serve as well, which you wouldn't have that if you work, you know, and I don't know, like in like a box factory or something, you know, you're not going to advocate for the boxes, you know? And you can do that. You can hit, I don't like the term hit, two birds with one stone. You can hit one, you can hit like two cops with one can of Pepsi.
Beautifully said.
One can of soup for my family.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I think that, you know, like us being able to get to like the better versions of ourselves or the best versions of ourselves, whatever you want to call it. I think that that is, has allowed us to have perspective on what it's like to come from somewhere where you didn't have a lot, where you had less, where you were a version of yourself that you didn't want to be and you had to work to get away from that. Like, I think that that us having those experiences is what allows us to interact with people who like other people probably just gave up on, you know, like, well,
in helping people. I mean, helping people is just it's a big driver for me. And it took me a long time to realize that, like, I was always trying to help people, even when I was active in my addiction, but I wasn't helping. I was like, you know, I was like, it's like, you can't, cause you can't, you know, the old saying, you know, you can't help people until you help yourself.
Yeah.
And it is true. And you know, but if that's a driving force for what you, you know, that keeps you, you know, healthy, I mean, like, and I know it is for me.
Definitely.
I know that if I let myself slip up too far, I'm not going to be able to do.
Yeah, this. And this definitely. Like,
you know,
it means a lot to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, like even just speaking to like burnout that you were speaking to earlier, it's like burnout happens when you're not taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. I think burnout happens, especially
when you're not allowed to take care of yourself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, I think burnout happens most often in social work is when you're being like, hey, these are all the things you need to do to take care of yourself. And you're doing none of them, you know, where you're just like, you need to get sleep.
Or you're not afforded the ability to even do it. Well, and I mean, it's not even into the equation, which, you know, is a pretty unique thing to, you know, some place, you know, the place I work now is much better with that, but other places I've worked have been really horrible with that.
I really liked what you said about like using the idea of wanting to provide the best services, because this is a job that like I am very passionate about. And, and so I can definitely lean on that concept to maintain the best version of myself. Like I want to be as healthy and productive as I can. So I'm going to make sure that like I am taking care of, and that I am taking care of myself to the best of my abilities so that I can continue to, like, you know, serve the community as effectively as I possibly can. It's a good driving force behind wanting to do that.
And for me, you know, it even goes back deeper, you know, like I held off from doing this kind of work for a long time because I knew I wasn't healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, having come up in that system and having, you know, been in lots of locked facilities with people that were running the places who were not healthy, you know, who were underpaid and were abusive and whatever, you know, I knew I never wanted to be a person in that position, you know, like, or just, you know, stuck in being able to handle systemic inequities, which they all exist. I mean, they exist in the job that I have now, you know.
Better,
you know, so like being able to handle that too. I mean, like it's really hard to handle that stuff when you're not healthy. And so I feel like, you know, and nowadays I work with young people, but it's not like they're like still adults, that, you know, it's like transition age youth, which is like I don't know if I could work with even people younger, because it is difficult, and there's a lot more on you, you know, there's a lot more pressure to be healthy, you know, because I don't know, just my own experience growing up, it was, you know, they're just paying fucking people to make $9 an hour, you know, you're not going to get the best candidates,
Exactly.
for a child psychiatric unit or juvenile detention unit, you know?
It's Well, I mean, and I, the before we wrap up, I just wanted to acknowledge that, you know, like, I appreciate each of you, you know, taking the time to, like, get yourself to a place where you can provide for these people. Cause it's like houseless youth, I mean, youth in general, houseless people, like, just all of us need help. All of us need support. And we can't really properly get that support until we're supporting ourselves as well as we can.
Yeah, for sure. So,
well, excellent. Well,
we appreciate you too, Zayd.
Oh, I'm doing my best. Hey, I just bumped the mic stand. Well, Timo, it was such a treat having you.
Yeah,
you
so this is great. Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate you. All right. Well, that has been the Smoke Break. We will see you next time. Later, players.
We love you.